This is an interview with Michael LaRusha for the Oral History Project on Smoky Hollow. The interviewer is Annette Mills at 4127 Euclid Boulevard in Youngstown on April 24th at 1:30 p.m.
That's when the ministry began. My mother's name was Catherine, and I was born on Watt Street and then moved to, at one time or another, moved to Rand Avenue, and there I stayed till about 1917. My parents bought a home on Walnut Street, and at one time they put up a store, and we had several stores on Wall Street. We had one next door, which a cousin of mine owned, one across the street, which the Tucci's owned, one down the street, which the Gaglione's owned, and there was one across the street from Tucci, which some Jewish people owned, and then it became a cooperative and was owned by Bunyale's people. And in turn, a fellow by the name of Tom Cernello bought it. And then he run that for a while, and he put one across the street, a nice brick building. And he had a home in back of it, and he ran that for a good many years. But right now that store is operated by some Arab people. I'm not sure, but I think so. But what I remember of my childhood, living on Walnut Street, people were of all denominations and nationalities. And I remember one time there was a German people lived across the street from us. And my mom and dad had an open oven in the back, which they baked bread in. And it was, I forget, it was some holiday, but these German people wanted to use the oven, and my mother granted them permission, and they gave us a loaf of bread. And I was quite young then, but that bread, I haven't tasted anything since, but it was the most delicious bread that I could recall. No kidding. It's really, oh man, if I could have some now, I'd really appreciate it. Really, it was real good. And my mom had boarders at her home, and I remember when it came the time of Lent, before Lent, they used to stay up nights drinking and eating and telling stories about their home in Italy, and used to keep me up late at night, and I wasn't too good the next day for getting up, I tell you. I went to Wood Street School for a while, and then a few of us boys and girls down there went to St. Joseph's for about 3 years, St. Joseph School. That was a German nationality church. And we stayed there 3 years only because at the end of when it came time, 3 years, why they asked us to leave. Really, they asked us to leave. I don't know why, but we all left. And then I went to Central Junior High. It's right now at Youngstown Engineering School. And then from there I went to Grand High. And I used to hang around the Y a lot. And there's a branch by the name of Newsboys Club, and a fellow by the name of Raymond Lawrence Johnson. His nickname was the Curly. And I thought very much of Curly. He was one of the grandest persons I ever knew. Well, through him, I became acquainted with the Y, and I used to do a lot for him and lots of the kids at the Y. And then in 1934, I took it over because Curly was sick, and he died in 1935. And from 1934 to 46, I kept the Y going. It was called Little Y, and then the Newsboys Club. We had many boys going in and out of the Y, Newsboys. You have to tell all that.
What were some of the things that that the Newsboys did, Mr. LaRusha?
Well, we used to have I had a lot of help. I didn't do this all by myself. I had a lot of help with the boys. We had the baseball league, basketball league, and the baseball and basketball leagues took a lot of work because we needed umpiring and refereeing and timekeepers in basketball, which took up a lot of time. It took a lot of boys to help out. And they did a nice job. We only charged a nickel a month. A lot of times we didn't have the nickel to pay. And the boys, I never worried about them paying it. We used to have movies on the Saturday nights, and we used to charge 2 cents to get into movies, but we didn't even collect that. We didn't worry about the 2 cents. And then we had the other nights, we had Monday and well, most of the nights were occupied with in the winter months with basketball, but then, as I said, we had movies on Saturdays, we had Sunday nights on Wednesday nights, which we had the people, boys acting or imitating other people that they'd seen in the, at that time they had the stage shows downtown, which was the Hippodrome and the Palace, I believe. And they used to imitate these acts they seen down there, and then they'd come back up to Newsboys Club on Wednesday nights and perform them. And then sometimes, well, most of the times you'd have storytelling. And I tried to do that, but most of the times I had people come in and tell stories. And I, as I said, I did that from 1946, and from 1946 they asked me to keep on, but I had it. So I went to the Falcon Foundry. In fact, I went to Falcon Foundry in 1943, Falcon Bronze at that time.
Excuse me just a minute, Mr. LaRusha. Before you go into the foundry portion of it, could you tell us about what age group these boys were in?
Well, they were anywhere between the, 8 and 17, 18. Well, we had older boys in there that came in after 9 o'clock, like the Siamese Club and the other clubs. We had, at that time, there were clubs that organized because of the Depression, had no place to go. So having a gym up there, which wasn't too big, but if it served a purpose, then I had all kinds of clubs that belonged in, the, in our league played up there, but the Siamese and other clubs, I can't remember other than the Siamese was fun with coming up there at least twice a week after 9 o'clock using the gym. And they were over 18, they were 18 to 25.
And they kept getting older then, well, program. Could you tell a little bit about the testimonial that was given for you?
The testimonial was given to me on the February 2nd, 1964, and all the people from the used to come to the news board, they were growing older, and they wanted to honor me, and the chairman of that committee was Conzi Lucci, Al Farrell, Charles Stevens, Tony Tucci, and Tony DeTate, and Ed Winsome, and a bunch of others that used to come to the News Boys Club, and they honored me, and they had a dinner up at the Mahoning Country Club on that day, and it was a nice party. And we had over 600 people there. There was a dinner dance. As I said, it was on Sunday, February the 2nd at the Mahoning Country Club.
And that was quite an honor then for you, wasn't it?
Right.
I would imagine it was quite thrilling to have these boys remember you
right.
after all those years.
Right.
I think that's a real credit to you. Could you tell me a little bit before we go on again about, you said something about your mother had boarders.
Right.
Could you, for this younger generation, maybe explain what boarders were?
Well, boarders were people that lived in your home. Their parents, their wives and people all across the sea right, are still in Italy, and they hadn't come back over here yet because they didn't send for them. And so they had someplace to live, and my mother was willing to take them in. And she used to take care and feed them, and of course for a fee.
And that, they were kind of like rumors then.
Right, rumors. Right,
was this quite common
right
in
that
the Smoky
time, yes.
Hollow and during that period?
At that time, yes.
All right. You mentioned something else about 3 years in school.
Or the St. Joseph. We had boys and girls, of course. Most of them were Italian descent. And he went to the Mass County St. Joseph School, and Monsignor Cooney was there at that time, and there's a priest there by the name, his assistant by the name of Father Reckland. And we thought a lot about him, but why they asked us to leave, I don't know. But Father Reckland, he was one of the best men I've seen in my life. He used to come out and play ball with us, and the ballpark that we played in, locked behind the school, was small. And he used to come out and he used to break the windows across the street, but nothing was said because he used to fix them.
Okay, and could you tell us a little bit about what were some of the movies that you showed in the Newsboys Club?
Well, I can't remember the movies, but the one thing I do remember, we used to have a serial every week. It was a two-reeler, and we'd run that, and it was continuous about 16 weeks. And just excitement every week about these serials, and I just can't remember them.
Okay. All right. This was quite a thing then. It kept the boys off the streets,
right,
didn't it?
Right.
And it gave them a place to go.
Well, not only that, but we had a shower room there that had about 16 showers in it. And that shower room was continuous being used every day of the week, and Saturdays from 9 o'clock till it was ready to close up, and that was 9:30, 10 o'clock. And the boys, that one boy, I don't want to mention his name, but one time he told me that that was the first shower he ever had. First bath, because there was no bath at that time.
Right, so then that was kind of a pleasure,
right,
thing, and still they kept their persons clean.
Right.
This is a...
Clean they kept, because that place really kept them clean.
Okay, that was good. All right, is there anything else that you would like to mention about the Newsboys and your involvement with the club itself before you go into your own employment after that?
Well, I hope I've done a lot of good with them. Up there they say I have. And any boys I meet today, they thank me again and again. But that was a job that I felt I had to do, and I did the best I could with it. I enjoyed it, but after so many years, I did have it.
All right. Did you have any boys of your own, Mr.
Williams? No, I didn't. I had one daughter, Gloria Sam.
All right. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your own family now and then go on about
Well,
your
I married my wife in 1934, and my daughter was born in 1939, and she's a mother with two children today, but she did go to Youngstown University. She graduated there. She has a master's degree from there. And she taught school for a while at McKinley on, I think that's, is it Bryson? I don't know what it is.
That's in the Youngstown school.
Yeah, Youngstown Board of Education. And she taught there for 5.5 years, and right now she has a boy, 12, and a girl, 8. She'll be 8 May 1st this year. And she's quite involved with the Lady Long Carmel Church. She's taking the CTD classes down there. And she's right there right now, in fact. And I have a son-in-law, if you want to know about him. He's an industrial engineer. He's been working with Sharon Steel, but first of May, he's going to Republic Steel.
All right, now could you tell us a little bit about your own life in Smoky Hollow, as you remember it as a youngster and up until the time you left Smoky Hollow?
Well, it's, most of my time at Smoky Hollow was spent at the Y, and it was a Newsboys Club, and I lived in the Smoky Hollow until 1964. As far as my childhood, I was busy with being at the Newsboys Club, and that kept me going all the time, and I really didn't have too much time to do anything else.
Where was the Newsboy Club? In Smoky Hollow?
No, it was Wick Avenue's the boundary line. So at one time it was in the Smoky Hollow, because the first Newsboys Club was behind the library. Where they had a game room and an upstairs where they had club meetings. And Curly Johnson had that. And then they moved it to a barn behind Youngstown State University. They fixed this barn up for club rooms, and they built a gym. And we had a gym and game room, and as I said before, a shower room. and that's where my time was occupied.
Of course, at that time it wasn't university, it was just Youngstown
College.
Right. Okay, and with just Jones Hall standing at
right,
that time.
Right.
All right. Would you like to go ahead then and finish telling us about some of the things that you could recall, incidents that happened in Smoky Hollow, and then go on into your employment?
Well, not really. Like I said, I was busy with Smoky Hollow. They had Harrison Field down there, which was quite busy. They had the playground, Youngstown playground. I don't know, I shouldn't say association, because there was a Youngstown Playground Association. And that was run by Mr. Chase, but the playground down at Harrison Field was run by the city of Youngstown, the recreational department. And I've seen a lot of my boys down there, and we used to Harrison Field a lot at that time. And there used to be, the one time there was football played back there, down there, and so was baseball. And then it was got, the athletes got too big, and they couldn't use Harrison Field for baseball and football. They had to move it out, they had more room.
Okay, all right. Could you tell us a little bit about when you went to work at the foundry?
Well, I worked at Falcon. I went to work there. It became that I had to go to work in the foundry because their wife, YMCA couldn't keep me unless I got into some kind of defense work. So they got me a job at Falcon Bronze. And I stayed there for 10 years, and a fellow by the name of Mr. Wick, James L. Wick, owned a good part of Falcon Bronze. And I stayed there for 10 years, and after 10 years, a bunch of the workers at the Falcon Bronze wanted to form a union, which we didn't have down at the Falcon Bronze, and Mr. Wicker would have nothing to do with it. So he sold out to a company in Meadville, another foundry, and that left me out of work. And the fellows that worked at Falcon Bronze were brought in by Ralph Scarrett and John LaPata, and there's a president. Vice President of Falcon Bronze at that time was a fellow by the name of Louis M. Nesselbush. We called him Colonel because he's a colonel in the Army. And he was a sick man. He had hypertension, which was pretty bad. And they didn't include him for a while, but it came time that they had to, because Mr. Nesselbush knew all the know-how. And then they started forming their own company, which I was part of it, down in Lowellville, and that's called Falcon Foundry. And I was there from 1953 till 1976.
Up until 1976. Right. Are you still employed there now?
No, I'm retired. It's February 1st, 1976.
Okay. Could you tell us about what some of the things were that you made at the foundry?
Well, Falcon Foundry is a non-ferrous foundry, which means that the makes things out of copper and brass and manganese bronze, and most of the work is for blast furnaces. It's a cooling system, they call them linings, which are used in blast furnaces and cost quite a bit of money. And this is all made out of copper, 100% copper. And then they do make bushings that the mills use in their work, repair work.
Mr. Larish, could you tell us a little bit more about, again, getting back to the Smoky Hollow, could you tell us about some of the people in Smoky Hollow, other than the boys that you worked with?
Well, you go there.
Anyone that you know anything about, or even your neighbors, what kind of neighbors they were, this kind of thing. What kind of a community the Smoky Hollow itself was?
Well, there were people from we had Jewish people, Italian people, German, and in fact, at one time, we had two homes on our lot, and the people who lived in our back home were Russian people. And they're all nice people, all working people, and tried to do the best they could. And if anybody needed help, they sure seemed they got it. And they all had hard workers. We never had any trouble at Don's Smoky Hollow, never. We could keep our doors open, walk the street, no problems at all.
All right, Mr. LaRouche, could you tell us a little bit about what you remember about the Depression?
Well, what I remember about the Depression, it was tough. There was no work, no money. And I remember one time, me and my wife went down to, used to be a store of Wagner's, they used to call it, meat market, down there in the corner of Walnut and Federal Street. Right now, I think Cambridge is in there. And I went there to buy a piece of meat, and this was too much in my pocket. I just couldn't buy it. That's how tough things were.
All right. Was this pretty much the case then?
For everybody.
Everybody.
Right.
All right.
Right. Everybody's trying to make a living, but they just couldn't make it. There was no work. It was tough.
Mm-hmm. It was tough nationwide,
right.
Not
well,
just in
right.
Smoky Hollow.
Right.
All right. Did the Depression have an effect on the people, do you think, of Smoky Hollow? I mean, as far as their attitudes and the were
they
depressed?
It,
or
no, they weren't. They took it day by day, and they weren't never depressed. There's always a smile on their face. And always trying to help each other out, and just took life easy when they, and worked hard when they had to.
And they kind of pulled together then,
right.
And it was kind of a close community, would
right.
you say?
I'd say it was.
All right. Could you? Is there anything else that you could recall again about Smoky Hollow that is outstanding in your as you look back over your own life there?
Well. I would say this about the Smoky Hollow, the boys of these people that live down there, they all come out in shining colors. They just went to school, some of them had to go to the Army like 1942. They all come back and they all went to school and got an education. Some are doctors, some are lawyers, and some are recreational people, but they all made good.
Then they all bettered themselves,
right.
Even though they did have
right.
a rough start.
Right.
All right. Is there anything else that you could include in our tape before we? Something like what was a typical day like in the hollow?
Well, there was too much going on. There was depression. That was tough, and they did the work around the house. And had a little garden if they had room. And I was with the boys all the time. I used to, when if they weren't at the Newsboys Club, they were down to Harrison Field, running around that field just to make themselves useful. And the parents wouldn't worry about them because they knew where they were. And they'd stay with the parents and stay home and do their work, which keep the house. And the men had nothing to do, so they'd help around the house.
And, could you tell us a little bit about Harrison Field? I know that they had softball games and, like you said, football games. And was that all there was there? What would draw the children there?
Well, they had the swings, they had teeter-totters, they had the sliding boards. But talking about softball, I was worked with the softball teams too, the men's teams. I used to be a scorekeeper for them, and they used to play softball, pitching hardball, or pitching fast pitch, as we call it. And we had a lot of people come down, and we used to play every Sunday morning. And those fields, we had double headers down, and one at each end of the field, one game at each end of the field, and all the people from the hollow used to attend and watch these games. And they were very excited.
All right, you had good Smoky Hollow support
right,
then for the
right.
games. All right, we're during at the playground in Smoky Hollow. You said they had, you know, teeter-totters and I would imagine a sandbox. Were these under supervision?
Yes, they were.
They
the
were.
The time they were.
Okay.
The city of Youngstown had supervision there.
Okay. And there was
Park Department. That's the same name I was thinking about. The Park Department ran the playground, and they had supervision there all the time.
Okay. All right, then this did give have a place for the children to go then during the day. All right, is there anything else that you could recall? Do you remember anything about the WPA or the three C's or anything?
WPA, I was on it for a while myself, and I think they just made work for the people. And I remember being up at the back of Ann's school for a while, trying to make a level place, where taking this from one place and putting it on the other. And I remember being back in Meander Dam for a while, and doing about the same thing.
All right, could you describe a little bit about what you did do?
Well, I used to pick and shovel. Like I said, taking dirt in one place and pick it one and then shovel it and put it in another place. And the CCs, some of my friends went to CCs and they did a lot of work, a lot of good work for them. It was a really good experience for them. And of course, it was a way of helping out at home because some of that money would come home. I didn't go there, but some of my friends went. It was a real experience for them.
And do you think such a program would be beneficial today?
Well, I think so. I really do. I think they should have it.
The reason, do you have any reason that you would think that they should have it?
Well, the CCs, you mean?
Right. Or either one of the programs, actually.
Well, both of them if need be, but I think the youth of today don't have too many jobs to go to. And I think they could use something like that to get them out and see the world a little bit, change them some different places, and have more construction work or anything that needs to be fixed. And I think they'd get a lot of experience out of it.
Right. They could also use this, the three C's or WPA, either one then, to help beautify our parks.
Right.
And
keep them clean.
Right. And clean them and
right.
even build some
right.
cupboards and things of
right.
this nature. To me, then, it would give these boys that are drifting now
right.
aimlessly
right.
Maybe a position
right.
and a purpose.
Right, instead of trying to get in trouble.
Right. An
keep
idle
up.
Person is
right.
bound to
right.
get for trouble. All right. Then some of the things that we did have, even though we didn't have the abundance of money and things of this nature, we did have the Smoky Hollow or the area did have many things open for these for children
right.
and younger
right.
People. All right, even like you said, the older people, were they permitted to go into these? You know, say like your father or your uncles, were they allowed to go into these programs?
Why, yes.
Anyone was
right.
allowed to go into.
Don't be anything?
Yes, either
yes,
one.
Yes, they were. Even CC, they had older people and they were going to CC camps.
Was that kind of a voluntary thing, or was that?
No, you had to ask. You had to ask to go.
Right. I mean, you had to volunteer
right.
to go.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you got paid for it.
But
you made something. You made some kind of a wage. I don't know what it was, but you made some kind of a wage.
All right.
But
you could volunteer to go.
Right.
But then, on the same token, they didn't turn you down because
no.
of.
No.
Whatever reason.
No.
All right, then they did have a volunteer program, which I think is excellent. And then it did give them a purpose, and it also gave them a little bit of spending money.
Right.
All right, what else could you think now? Do you remember anything about the NRA or Prohibition or anything of this nature that was happening during that period that you lived in Smoky Hollow?
Well, Prohibition, made a lot of bootleggers out of some people. They had one way of making a dollar. It wasn't because they wanted to break the law, but they sold. They made their wine and they sold it. But it wasn't on account of, as I say, trying to break the law. Just trying to make a living.
All right. Then they went out of their way then to survive.
Right.
All right, could you tell us a little bit about this, about Prohibition itself? You said they made a little bit of wine and sold it. Was it just on that steel or was there harder products
made? No. The only date that I remember them making is wine. They didn't make any harder products than wine. They sold out of their own home. They didn't go around soliciting. You had to go to their home to get it.
Right, you had to go and buy it.
Right.
So you had to. They didn't force anyone to do it.
No.
All right, was this pretty common?
Yes, it was.
It was common.
Right.
All right. Then more than just one person was doing this. All right. It was a little bit of an extra money coming in again.
It was an extra money. It was probably the only money they had.
All right. Do you have any idea how they made this, Mr. LaRiche?
The wine?
Yes. What would go into wine?
Well, they'd go down and buy grapes. They'd have several barrels of to grind it in, and they keep it, for about 8 days so that the grape would ferment, and it'd get a wine press and press the wine and press the grapes and get all the juice and put in another barrel, and then they would let that ferment for a while, and then when it stopped fermenting, they'd cork it. And let that sit for a while, and then it would tap it itself.
All right, when you say ferment, could you describe what you mean by that, ferment?
Well, the grapes had to stay in the, before they were put in the wine press, they had to stay in a barrel 6 or 8 days. It'd raise up during the night, and then they'd stir it during the day, early in the morning. And, all I know about it is, stayed for about 8 days, and like I say, they put in the wine press and just let the, I don't know what, why it ferment, I can't tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would come like, it would start like boiling.
Right.
Is that what
boiling,
it would do when you say ferment? It would kind of like, all right, and then then you tap it after 8 days?
No, after 8 days you let the mesh, you just squeeze the grapes, the mesh grapes,
mm-hmm.
and then you put the juice in the barrel. And then you let that ferment for about 30 days, I think. I just can't recall. And then if it stopped fermenting from boiling, like you say, well, then they would cap it or cork it, let that stay for a while until all the solvent settled down to the bottom of the barrel. And then they would tap it and sell it. They'd drink it whatever they wished to do.
All right, there was quite a process then.
Right.
It wasn't just, you know, getting a couple boxes of grapes just putting them in there. I didn't realize that, you know, that there was, and I'm sure that some of our younger generation would have no idea. This is the reason I was wondering if you could describe a little bit of what it involved. All right, was there anything else that you could recall in Smoky Hollow that was part of everyday life and which was common in the Smoky Hollow and probably nationwide? Just like, say, the Prohibition. Do you remember, could you recall anything else? Gambling or any vice or?
Well, the only vice that I see to stay in your peaceful sand, and he used to run the crap gigs down there, when I remember. And they usually did this on a Sunday, had nothing else to do. And people would come down there and they'd shoot the crap, like you want to call it. And pretty soon a wall would come down and break it up. But
was that when you say crap, what do you mean by crap?
Well, dice.
All right, a dice game.
Dice game.
Would this game be played for money?
Right.
What
little money there was.
All right, then would be, they would,
right.
They were actually gambling.
Right,
then.
They were gambling.
All right, is this Mr.
Peaceful Sam?
Yes, he's still living today?
No, he's dead.
He's deceased.
Right.
All right. Is there anything else? Do you know anything about the mafia?
No, that I don't know.
All right. Let's see what else that we might. Could you describe your own home in Smoky Hollow? And then you mentioned something about having a small store.
Right.
Could you describe that a little bit for us?
Well, we had my mother ran it, because my dad, he died in 1925, and she was trying to make a living, and she had this store, and there were so many stores around there. I don't know, what, she never did seem to sell too much, but how she did it, I don't know. I really can't tell you. So we had the store, we had a storeroom there, and then we had a kitchen, the living room. We had three bedrooms upstairs, which my brother and I and my sister used, my mother. But the store wasn't too prosperous. Never did make too much of it. And I remember she had tobacco in the front, and that's one thing I couldn't take it. I couldn't take the smell of tobacco. I'd have to keep away from it, really. I never used tobacco. I never used anything else either. But at that time we had no bath, if you want to know that. When I was a kid, dog, probably that's what got me interested in newsboys, for keep myself clean. But things weren't too happy in those days, I mean, as far as modern living was concerned. There wasn't any.
But was this, again, pretty much the way everybody
right.
lived at that time,
right.
in that, and
right.
especially there and
right.
In Smoky Hollow? There wasn't anyone that
no.
was any better off than the
no.
next one. They were all in the same boat.
So the story about him, you know, Cook, Donald Cook, Don Cook,
right.
Tony Cook, right.
Right, and then he went on then to... he was also a member of Smoky
right.
Hollow. Would you like to talk a little bit about him and how he went ahead and got in business?
Well, I really don't know, because after he, Tony Cook, he worked for several Chevrolet people in town, then he got his own franchise, or whatever you want to call it, his own company. He started one in Danfield, but the reason I was talking about him, but one time I met him, it's one of our doings that we have down at the church, and he spoke to me, and he says that that was the first place he had to go take a shower and keep clean.
That was Anthony Cook.
Right.
All right, because we didn't have
bathrooms in our own home.
Right. Did you have an outhouse, or were you... had an inside facility for that. All right, there were a lot of them, I understand, in Smoky Hollow that did have outhouses.
Right, they might have had, but I can't remember really, truly, if they did or not, because I don't remember that. The toilets used to be in the basement of the house,
mm-hmm.
but I don't remember any outhouses.
Not a bathroom
right.
as we know today.
Right.
Okay, I know that some of the people that I have taped have mentioned the fact that they did have to use an outhouse even in the winter months.
Yeah.
And just think of it
right.
makes me shiver. All right. So I guess some of them were more fortunate than others
right.
when you come right down to it.
Yes, I guess so.
All right, and then there were two boys and one girl in your own family, and then in your family after you were married you had just the one daughter.
Right.
But you have a lot of boys
right.
From the newsboys.
Oh,
isn't that wonderful?
That.
All right, Mr. Lewis, is there anything else that that you'd like to add and include before we conclude this?
Not really.
All right, would you like to give maybe a brief statement on what your actual experience was then in the Smoky Hollow, and we'll sum it up there.
Well, like I said, I was busy with the Newsboys Club, and then when I got married, I had working with the Falcon Bronze. I just had to give up the Newsboys Club and go to work and make a living for my family, which was my wife, of course, and in 1939, my daughter was born. And from there, from Falcon Bronze, I went to Falcon Foundry. I just kept working until I retired.
Mm-hmm. All right, then, as far as your own recollection of your experiences right in Smoky Hollow, then it was pretty much tied up with the Newsboys and your
right.
own employment.
Right.
All right. Can you recall any time, either prior to the Depression or during or even after the Depression, you know, that that stands out? Or how did you feel, what did you feel about World War II? What did it do for you?
Well, it kept the, I seen the boys from the Newsboys Club to go to the Army, and I have a friend that, one I remember, he's a colonel right now, and that's Albert Cassone. He was in reserves in 1941, and then the war came out in 1942, so he was drafted. And not only him, but a lot of other boys. In fact, the boys at Smoky Hollow, there's a monument on the corner of Rain and Wallen. A lot of my boys' names are on there, and I didn't feel too good about the boys. And one especially, a boy by the name of Bill Santor, just out of high school, and he was in the Army 6 months before he was in Iwo Jima and was bombed to death, and that didn't please me one bit. The war didn't do me no good, because I've seen too many of my boys go, like I say, I didn't care too much for war. In fact, I don't care for any war.
All right, Mr. LaRisha, I want to thank you very much for permitting me to come into your home and to tape you, and for the lovely interview with you. And thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. Quite welcome.